KP.
KPC.
News.
Information.
Culture.
KPCC.
California Sensibility.
Hey, I'm Amy Choi.
And I'm Rebecca Lair, and this is the Mashup Americans.
Oh my God. So Rebecca, we have hit episode number 5 with our podcast.
Yay!
We have talked to Margaret Cho. We have looked at all the immigrants in Donald Trump's mashup life. We just got done with our genome.
And today on the show, I'm going to talk to Aminatou Sow, who's the co-founder of the Tech Lady Mafia, which is this really cool group that's devoted to women who work in and around the internet, astrophysicists, coders, developers, digital strategists. And she's also the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts, Call Your Girlfriend.
Call Your Girlfriend. Well, I'm definitely doing that in 2016. And I think that's an awesome way to ring in the new year. So, that feels like a milestone. What else are you pumped about for this year?
I love New Year's. I love kind of this opportunity to reset. And what's kind of amazing as mashups is that we get a few chances. I feel like you can choose your own renewal, reset, New Year's button whenever you need it. So, you know, as a Jew, I have Rosh Hashanah, but there's also with my Persian friends, there's Nowruz in the spring, or there's...
Is that the one with the scallions?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, awesome. And I can go spank some Persian friends with scallions at Nowruz then.
Good idea. But I always feel like this sort of Gregorian calendar New Year's feels very significant for me. January feels totally different from December. It feels lighter. It feels open. It feels like there's all this opportunity, and I'm just pumped to start fresh again. But what are you excited about?
Well, I would say normally, I completely agree with you. January 1 feels like a really big day. But for me, this year, I gotta say, I'm the most pumped about the goddamn year of the goat ending.
Oh, God, the year of the goat.
The year of the goat. I'm a goat in the Chinese lunar calendar.
Which is February is the, right?
Yes,
February,
I believe it is February 8th.
Yes, February
8th. Is when my life is going to improve,
okay,
apparently.
Why?
So I'm a goat. I was born in 1979. This is 2015 was the year of the goat again. Your year in the Chinese calendar is actually... You've basically done something to really piss off some Chinese gods. Like, the world is kind of against you at that point. So in order to ward off bad luck, you are supposed to do a couple of different things. You could wear red, you could wear gold, or you could do what I opted to do, which is wear jade. And so wearing jade kind of, like, fends off evil during your year.
Protective.
So, of course, you know, I thought it was, like... kerflooey. So I wore no jade, I wore no gold, I wore no red. And, like, promptly... 3 weeks after the year of the goddamn goat started, I got mugged at knife point.
Oh, God, that was the worst.
That was the worst. Not good. And then, you know, I got pregnant, which was amazing. But then I had like this like really kind of tricky, hard pregnancy. And then I gave birth, which was amazing. And I was like, okay, done. Like, this is the best year ever. My daughter is amazing, right? And then my daughter, because she was born in the year of the goat, she's a goat. She still has to live out the next few months as a goat. She got pneumonia at 3 weeks old. So
it's just
we're basically blanketed in jade at this point in our house. We're like, I've got like red drapery and like whatever gold jewelry I have is like laying out on surfaces.
Her eyes are just like peeping out through piles of jade.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a look.
I'm the year of the dog, and I think 2018 is the next year of the dog. So we have about 2 years for me to stockpile jade and gold and red things. Are you ready for that?
I'm looking forward to shopping.
Okay, good. February 8th, you're going to take that jade off, but we're starting fresh now, getting ready for it.
Yes.
Let's shake that goat off.
Shake that goat.
Is that a new jam? Hi, Amina. Welcome to the Mash of Americans. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you say your full name and what you do?
My name is Aminatou Sow. I am the co-host of a fun podcast called Call Your Girlfriend. It's for long-distance besties everywhere. And that's what I do for fun. We were talking about earlier before we started recording how my New Year's resolution is to learn how to introduce myself better.
Yeah.
And not to stress out about it, depending on context. So I'm sticking with that for now.
Well, we talk a lot about names. You know, what our names are, what we name our kids, how does this reflect who we are and where we're from and where we're going and the mix of all those things. But what does Aminatu mean, actually?
So Aminatu is the it's the Guinea version of Amina. In Senegal, the name is Aminata. And Amina was Prophet Muhammad's mother. So it just has this connotation of like being faithful and respectable and yeah, and all of that stuff in Arabic. But every like, you know, it's like every country kind of has a spin on it. It's interesting because I've also, I don't know, it's like I think back about that person who I was in college that was like, oh, Aminatu is such a hard thing for American person to learn. So I felt compelled to shorten my name and I really regret it in a lot of ways. Because one, I'm like, I have great SEO under this name. So like, first of all, please only call me this name. But I think that there's, you know, you just get older and wiser and you just start feeling a lot more pride also about like where you're coming from and, you know, and who you are. And for me, it's like my great grandmother had this name and she was this really remarkable person. And yeah, you know, I'm like, don't make your name. It's like if I could go back to myself, like, you know, like college self or even high school self, it's like, don't be like, don't try to make this easier for these people. Like Americans have ridiculous names that I have to learn. So
totally.
There's like, there should be no shame in this, but it's really funny. For example, like if ever I take an Uber or something or like some sort of car service that has my name, that the experience that I have is always this. And now it just, it's like it used to annoy me and now I just laugh at it where they're like, Amina, that's a very interesting name. Do you know where it's from? And I'm like, no, I have a Muslim name and I have no idea where it's from. Please, you know, like mansplain Amina to me. And so inevitably, like people will, or they'll say, are you Muslim? And then I'll say, no, but my family is Muslim. And that like really drives people crazy.
Yeah.
Because I remember trying to talk to my grandmother about like converting to another religion. And she was like, she's like, Amina, like if you're born Muslim, you die Muslim. Like that's not a... She's like, that's not like an option for you. And so that always, I feel like that's my tiny little way of rebelling is telling people it's like, no, but my family's Muslim.
Uber rebellion.
Yeah. And they like, they never know what to do with it. But yeah, I'm just, it's like at the point where I want to change my name on the app. Cause
what would you make it? What would your non?
Well, my Starbucks name is Amanda. So, you know, so might as well just change it to the Starbucks name.
Okay. So I have many follow-up questions.
Yes.
And I want to start with this idea of like, where have you seen yourself or felt yourself most reflected? So have you ever had a moment where you've been consuming media and thought, oh my God, that's me, in a surprising context?
Honestly, this is very new for me. I come from a family of like media fanatics. And I think that it's because, so my family is from Guinea in West Africa. And when my parents were growing up, they were basically living in like pseudo communist life where everything was really regimented. And so like freedom for them just means like we read everything and we watch the news for everything now. Like they're just like, you know, they grew up like glued to the radio and now it's everything. So I've always been like a voracious like media consumer. But I think that for me, at least the first time that I ever saw media that was geared at me, I was at Sundance last year and I was watching this movie called Bande de Filles. It's girlhood in English. And it was these like African immigrant girls in Paris and kind of what their life looked like. And at the end of it, I cried because I had never seen that before where it was like, that is me. That's like actually me. And then it was this realization of like, oh, is this how white people feel like all the time?
Awesome? Yes.
Yeah, I was like, they just feel awesome because they're everywhere. And for me, like, you know, I was so shocked. I like called everybody I knew and I was like, you have to watch this movie. I was like, even if it doesn't appeal to you or it doesn't interest you. And there's parts of it, you know, that are really interesting because it's directed by a white woman and a lot of people have like qualms with that or whatever. But for me, I was like, no, literally, like, here is a movie about told through the gaze of this like African, like French girl. And that's the closest to me I'm ever going to find on a screen.
Totally. That sort of brings me also to this idea of tell us how you mash up.
Oh man, I mash up in every way. So like I told you, my family's from Guinea, West Africa, French Guinea.
Yeah.
But I've never lived there. My parents were basically kind of already living in exile by the time I was born. So I grew up in Nigeria and in Belgium, with like a couple of stints in France in there. In Nigeria, we lived in the capital called Lagos, and then the capital moved to this town called Abuja. So I lived there for a year. And then I went to boarding school in this like tiny town called Jos that was like 3 hours away from Abuja, which was, it was like a very weird place. It's like the temperature there is like perpetually 70 degrees Fahrenheit, which like if you know Africa, that's very weird. It's the only place in West Africa where you can grow strawberries and roses because we don't have a climate for that. And it's this town that's like full of evangelical missionaries because they set up like mission stations there, like way back when they were colonializing and evangelizing people. They're like, oh, the weather is nice here. We should stay here. But so one of the happy byproducts of that is that there is a great, great school there. And so my parents sent me there. I didn't really speak English.
What was the primary language?
Like we speak French. Mm. And I went to French school and all of my parents' friends spoke French and all of my friends spoke French and all of the people that worked for us spoke French. And so I transferred into 10th grade and I had to go through this like intensive learning of English and also like American English. Right. And everything was hard. It was like, oh, they write numbers differently. They do math differently. They're, you know, like they read differently. Everything was driving me crazy. And so in doing, like, the one thing that happens when you go to an American high school that people kind of don't realize is that you're kind of most equipped for going to college in America after that. And so that was it was like, okay, cool. Taking all these AP, IB classes. And yeah, sure, I'll move to America. But also, I'd always been, like, I had this, like, very romantic notion of how great America was. Mm. Because in my kind of, like, African / European experience, like, my dad was the only black man I knew that had an office job, right, of all of our, like, family in Europe and stuff like that. And so for me, I was like, no, like, I watch TV. I watch The Cosby Show. Look at all these black people thriving. Like, that only happens in America.
Mm.
So fast forward, I came to college here. I went to University of Texas at Austin. Mm-hmm. Hook 'em horns. you know, and had that, like, kind of fantasy movie college experience. It's like, hi, 50,000 people, football, Austin. You know, like, it was
great. Did you
get
into American football?
Yes and no. So, yes, in the sense that I, like, went to games, and I also tutored a lot of our athletes.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, it's like I like the ritual of football. The game itself, I was never really into. I was like, this looks a little barbaric to me. I don't know how I feel about this.
Wait, can we talk about you tutoring the athletes as a recent immigrant to the U.S.? I think that's an amazing story.
Yeah, you know, so it's like we're doing math and stuff. I'm like learning so much about America. So many of my friends were like hardcore Texans. Mm. And so Texas for me is forever my America home. And so, you know, it's like I did that and then I moved to D.C. And when I moved to D.C., so I was an international student all throughout college, which is also like this really fascinating experience. You're like, oh, man, we pay more money than anyone to go to school here. And yet they kind of treat you like crap. So anyway, I moved to D.C. And so, yeah, so it took me forever to find a job. And I got caught in this like weird, just like weird immigration, like awfulness, where my job was supposed to file my H-1B paperwork, and which is the green card, and then they like couldn't do it at the very last minute. They were like, sorry, we can't do this, the economy is bad. And that for me was like a huge shock, because I actually like I didn't have a home at that point. I had always been this like weird nomadic kid. And so what I had to do, and I couldn't go back to Guinea because my family had been living in exile from there forever, but that's where my passport is from. And so I had to apply to be a refugee in the United States. And that was its own just like awful. I think I still have PTSD from that process. It was just very hard and awful.
Can we talk a little bit about this idea of, obviously, right now in the world, the idea talking about refugees and what's happening in Europe and the Middle East is a huge part of the cultural zeitgeist and actually movements in the world and will impact the world for many, many years to come. And I'm wondering, for you, how did it feel? I mean, you came here to the U.S. of your own volition. But how did it feel to identify at that point in your life as a refugee?
You know, it's still something I struggle a lot with, right? Like, what is... And technically, I guess, like, the technical term for it, too, is that, like, I'm not even a refugee. I'm an asylee because I have asylum because I was already in the country. But it's, like, the same paperwork. you know, but it's a thing I struggle with a lot. And I think that, for me, what it did, too, at that time is that it really confronted me with a lot of privilege that I had. You honestly do not understand the amount of just even emotional labor that is involved with, like, being a displaced person and how there are no guarantees throughout the process and how you're depending on essentially, like, people's kindness and, you know, like, for and fighting for your life. And that to me is just crazy. It's so crazy. And it's something that is, I think this is the first time I've talked about it, honestly, like, outside of just friend circle. And it's something that's still, like, really hard for me to process.
Why was your family in exile, if you're comfortable talking about that?
Oh, because, I don't know, Guinea's a weird place. Democracy's like a new thing for us. And the first dictator that we had, Sékou Touré, was he was from a tribe that was the opposite of the tribe that my family was from. So a lot of my family was killed.
What was what tribe called?
My tribe is Fulani. And it was like we were this kind of class of intellectuals and traders. And, yeah, you know, it's like it's colonialism in Africa is really sad because basically Europeans set out they just like drew up these fake boundaries around like people who interacted in very different ways from before they came. And a lot of colonialism also just meant using divide and conquer tactics.
Right.
You know, when they would elevate like a chief from one tribe and that meant like shitting on this other tribe. And a lot of that resentment is still there. And so for our family, it's a lot of the men in our family had to leave the country really early on. Some of them died in these awful prison camps that they had. And it's just not been like a very pleasant experience altogether.
Unpleasant seems like an understatement.
Right.
But I was looking at Guinea, and Guinea is majority Muslim. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like one of those like 99.99.
I think it says 90%. It said about or 85%.
Well, I guarantee you that if you look at those statistics like over the last 10 years, that's probably shifted. Yeah, because there's like a very tiny Christian majority, like one of the Susu and Mandingo tribes have like very tiny Christian majority. And then there is these like very, I guess, like pagan religions also in the forest. But yeah, but it's like 100% like culturally Muslim, right? Like everything shuts down during Ramadan, for example.
Hmm. And did you grow up Muslim?
Yeah, I grew up Muslim. I went to, this is another way that I'm a mashup. So my family is obviously Muslim. And then I grew up going to Quran school when I was younger because that's how you learn the Quran in like after school programs. For us, but, you know, but my family also, you know, to my dad's credit, I feel that, like, of all of the different, like, branches of family or whatever, our cousins are, like, my dad never treated me different, even though I was the oldest in my family and I was a girl, right? He was always like, no, you're smart, you can do whatever you want.
Pretty progressive
also,
guy.
Like, Muslim, so you have, yeah, it's like, I think about it now and I'm like, this is wildly progressive. Like, even just compared to some of my cousins, like, it's just like it's crazy. Yeah, it's like my dad was only ever married to my mom. He was not polygamous. He like sent all of us to school, like all of these like weird. Yeah, my parents also like didn't have an arranged marriage. They married for love and they were one of the first ones in their generation to do that and all of the stuff. But so I went to Quran school, but then I went to this high school that was Christian. And so I was like, oh, man, religion, there's just too much happening. So now I just like don't identify with any kind of religion.
So can I ask you some etiquette questions?
Yes.
Okay. So what do you do when somebody mispronounces your name? Like, what is the best way to deal with it?
Man, I've gone through so many iterations of this. And, you know, if I'm really honest, I think that it depends like how I feel. But I think that at this point, if I don't correct how you say my name, it's because I'm like, literally, I don't give two shits about you, you know? And I'm like, okay. I'm like, this is another way that like people really underestimate like immigrants or people of color or whatever, is that they just like gloss over you. And so I'm just at a point where I'm like, yes, I'm like, if you say my name wrong and I don't correct you, it's probably because I'm like, I'm never going to see you again. But I think that one thing that I've been doing more is just, you know, like just the gentle correction where like I'll tell people, I'm like, hi, I'm like, you can introduce me as Aminatu. And, you know, and if we're friends, like you can call me Amina, like that's fine. That's not a big deal. But I just, I make it a point that like my email is always that, like all of my social media presence is always that, because I really want to reinforce to people that like, you know, that's my full name. And I think that afterwards you're free to just, you know, I'm like, people can call you what they want depending on the degree of familiarity they have with you.
Totally. Where do you feel most at home?
Man, that, you know, that's a really hard and tender question for me, because I think that, you know, I don't have a home traditionally like most people have. Like, I never grew up on the same street forever. I don't. So basically, I fail all of those like banking security questions all the time when they're like, what street did you grow up on? Where's your best friend from? So for me, home is mostly like home is always like where I'm at right now. Mm. On Call Your Girlfriend, we always joke with that, like home is where the Wi-Fi connects automatically. And I think that like to a lesser degree, I've really internalized that. Like for me, home is where I'm at currently, and I want to, it's like I try to make a home there and not be too nostalgic about things that I miss, because that gets really hard.
Do you have any talismans or things you put up that are, say, when you go to the new place that really kind of represent that move of making that space home?
Yeah, you know, so for a long time, until very recently, because I think it's in storage, God, thank goodness my grandparents will never hear this, or my dad, is I would always put up, like, our family Quran on the highest, like, shelf at your house, because that's what you're supposed to do, even though I don't believe in it at all. It was just, like, for me, it's just, like, this is a thing that my family does.
Yeah.
And nobody would notice, but, yeah, it's like that Quran's been in storage for, like, 4 years, so.
Oh, God. We gotta get that out.
R.I.P. But a couple of years ago, my friend's mom gave me a mezuzah.
Yeah.
And, like, it was kind of a joke, but I always put one up now. Every apartment I live in, and it just, it makes me like so delighted.
Wait, by the way, you just made my heart grow so big when you said that, so I love that. As a Belieber, because I know you love Justin Bieber, how do you feel about
since day one
the Justin Bieber Sorry Spanish remix?
It's so good. Siempre te vas porque
nunca te gusta mi honestidad. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like, you know, always I follow him on Twitter, and he's like one of three people I have a mobile alert for. So when he promoted it, I was on top of it. I'm like, our best Canadian. Let him stay in the country. Another mashup you should have on the show.
Free Justin.
Justin understands the struggle. He knows.
All right. So on that, I just want to say thank you so much. This has been so fun and so interesting to learn about you and your experience and your family. So thank you so, so much.
Yes. Thank you so much. I can't wait to come back to discuss my citizenship party, because I've been hoarding decorations from 4th of July for years.
Wait, when is it happening?
I think I'm like eligible to apply in like 2 years. So in my head, it's like far away, but it's going to be a coast to coast party. Don't worry. This is going to be a party train.
We're going to cover it. We're going to cover it on the Mashup Americans.
It's going to be the best. Thank you so much for having me. This was super fun. I love your show and I love what you do. And yeah.
Aminatu So is the co-host of Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties and badass ladies. And of course, she's a mashup almost American. You can find her on Twitter at Aminatu, which is Aminatou. The Mashup Americans are me, Rebecca Lehrer.
And me, Amy Choi.
Our show is part of the Infinite Guest Network of awesome podcasts.
Like The Dinner Party Download and Secret Skin with Open Mic Eagle.
And produced with Southern California Public Radio, KPCC.
Our show is also supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts on the web at arts.gov.
See you next time.
Adios. Siempre te vas porque nunca te gusta mi honestidad. Sabes que intento, pero las disculpas me salen mal.